Here we are with our PowerPoint presentation, and welcome to the boardroom. The name is sticking.
Name is sticking, exactly.
Name is sticking. All right.
Cheers. Do you have a lovely beverage with you, Steve? No.
I do. I have a one of these Waterloos, lemon lime Waterloos. It has some of that apple cider vinegar in it.
What? Oh, did you put it in?
Yeah, it's good.
This is a lovely Diet Coke.
Yes, nice.
Okay.
Programmed in BASIC, we explored 8-bit worlds. It so crashed onto a digital shore. All our records were scratched. Left alone, we were latchkey children. Terrified of nuclear war. In the glow of the cathode ray, every game we play on our 2600. Into the vertical blank, our highest scores have been ranked. Into the vertical blank, Generation Atari.
Welcome to the boardroom.
Yes.
What's up first? News!
Mostly Atari news.
Okay, what do we got? Okay, the first one, Yars Rising, a demo for Yars Rising. This is the game from way forward, the Yars Revenge sequel, or inspired by Yars Revenge sequel, that is more of, it looks like a Metroidvania, but I don't know because I haven't played it. But
what?
It's, yeah.
A Metroidvania Yars?
I don't
cannot
know. I'm just saying
wait.
That. I'm just saying that. I don't know.
Well, maybe it is.
It looks like an action platformer style game that is by Atari, by WayForward, who are a very well-respected indie developer. And this looks like a very interesting game. You can go download the demo on Steam right now and find out. I've not played it yet, but I'm going to when I get some time. So that's available.
And in the video, will you insert some video of it over us talking about it right now?
Probably. I'll probably do that, Jeff. If I get enough time, to get this video done by on time, I will do that.
How about this? Right. I know what kind of crunch you're under. I will create the video for all of these and send it over to you.
Oh, you can do that if you want to. Send the video for me. That would be amazing.
Because I have more video to make for this too.
Right. Next up. Because remember, this is a podcast too, so we got to make sure we say everything. Is a new game for the Atari, a new dump for the Atari ST, a game dump called Paris Dakar, which is a racing overhead racing game. Apparently, it was a Spectrum game, and it is on Atari Mania ST on Twitter announced this, and I went right over to Atari Mania. And it's there for you to download. I actually couldn't get it to work. So if you can get it to run, that'd be good. I don't know what I needed to do to get it to run, but the pictures make it look like a fun kind of an APB-like racing game.
So there already was a Paris Dakar game for the ST, but it was first person. So this is a different one for anyone that's listening who had Paris Dakar on the ST, the Amiga, the C64, or their IBM PC, which I think are the machines that came out on. I will play this and get you video of it working. This is exciting. I don't get on Twitter as much right now because I'm not at the computer as much as I was before. So I didn't see this. So I'm glad you caught it. And this is great. Can't wait to try it out, and I'll put some video of it right now. And the audio people will hear the sounds, but it'll be over what we're talking about. So there won't be a big pause or anything like that.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Here, the next one. Okay, Nano Cave ST covers. Well, I'm going to say Atari Crypt is a internet friend of the podcast. He leaves us nice reviews about our podcasts, especially when they're about ST stuff, which kind of makes us want to do more ST stuff. So Atari Crypt will come in. But this is a new GFA basic game called Nano Cave. And this is a little excerpt from what Atari Crypt wrote. He says, Nano Cave might be a work in progress, so there are few niggles, but it does not disappoint whatsoever. Its gameplay is straightforward without much of a learning curve or pesky complications. So it's quick and easy to play. From the start, you're exploring, using items, and killing dungeon beasts. It's like a version of Rogue. And one of the things he showed is there's lots of different filters for the graphics that you can use. So this is kind of the nicest looking one, but there's like a text filter as well, like an ASCII text filter and other things. So cool to see new games, and it's written in GFA Basic.
So I'll tell you, there are three different ways to make games on the ST right now. One of them is in GFA Basic because it can actually, besides the final version of GFA 3.5 is incredibly fast, like as fast or faster than C, with a lot of routines that are as fast as assembly language. And so if you make games in GFA, especially with some of the toolkits that are out there that came out when it came out, you can make some great games. There's a lot of ST games that have come out using it. With STOS, the STOS forums have been showing that there's a lot of stuff you can do with STOS to make plain ST and STE games. And then there's the toolkit that's the C toolkit that is, I think it's called ST Game Dev Tools or something like that. I forget what it is. Fantastic, where that's where you see these STE demos and games coming out that are that look just like they're on the Genesis or something like that. So
that's fantastic.
There's some good stuff coming out. So hopefully there'll be more of that. And I want to not just cover, but start using these tools to make something.
Yeah, it'd be fun to do some stuff with the tools.
The next one is Neo Sprint is awesome. So for full disclosure, Atari sent me a key to test this thing out, and it's awesome. So Neo Sprint is a new game by Atari. I played it on, it's probably coming out for the VCS and other systems, but I played it on Steam for the PC. It is like Sprint in the arcade, Sprint 2. It also is like Supercars on the ST and Amiga. Also, you get two different views of the race. You get the overhead single screen where everything's showing at once, and you get the sort of scrolling track view. It is bananas awesome. The control is awesome. So for me, a racing game is all about the control, and I've won my first race. That's saying a lot. If I can score a goal in my first soccer game, or I can win my first race, the game is for me. So Neo Sprint's great. I'll send you a video to play over this.
Awesome. This is, it looks really cool. It is true. This is the first one. This is the first time since, I'd say maybe it was 15 or 16 years ago, Atari sent us a code for the Wii version of Haunted House.
Yes.
Actually, they sent us two. I'm sorry. It wasn't a code. Well, I'm really dating myself. It's not a code. They sent us two copies.
Right.
One was to give away on the website, and one was to play. And actually, it was a pretty decent game. It got really bad reviews otherwise, but it wasn't a bad game. It's just that Haunted House to me is not really. I never really thought it was that good to begin with. I guess it's fine, but it's not really my favorite game. Right? I want more of an adventure game, or an RPG. But still. This is the first time in almost 16 years where Atari sent us a code for something.
I think at the time for Haunted House, it was one of the few things that Atari knew they owned, right? They hadn't sold.
Yeah. So like Scald, the guys from Scald gave us a code, but I didn't. I bought a copy to you. And we did a little overview of Scald, but I haven't really done any sort of real review yet because I haven't been able to play it all the way through. We'll get to that because I feel like that will be a fun thing to do. But for this one, you know, they said there's no strings attached. Like they gave the code, but we won't disclose that they gave it to us. But there's no strings attached. We don't have to give them a good review or anything, you know. And you know, we don't really care if we get these free codes.
Right.
So because
I like it,
it's fun, but it's like we don't need it. So you know, it's not like we're just going to give them a good review so that they give us more codes. So, but it's cool. This is a cool game.
And if I have time, I'll do a longer review.
There was one more when Digital Eclipse, which was not part of Atari at the time, when Atari 50 came out, Mike Mika gave us some codes as well.
Oh yeah, Mika.
So
Mika
as a disclosure. So, but we never reviewed that. We did a cursory review. I actually did a whole video review. I did a whole text review and took video for it, but I never recorded it. And I'm like, why don't I just do that? Like record that review. So I admit that may be something that I do. It seems like it's a little late, but maybe not. Maybe now after almost 2 years, it's kind of be afresh to have a
Atari
50 review.
Maybe you should do a new one where you just kind of look at the new stuff added also and kind of do a fresh look at Atari 50 or something like that.
Yeah. All right. Next up. Book Club. Book Club is Space Battle by Jamie Landino.
Jamie. So, Jamie's a friend of everything we've ever did.
Yes. Now, I wrote this review before Jamie sent us the books for free. So, again, I'm not trying to send people to send us stuff for free. Jamie did send us this book, though, which was very nice of him. I helped him.
Inscribed and everything.
Helped him do a little bit of review of it. But Jamie's is a book about the Mattel Television. It's about the first, because of the first, and Mattel and Television, the first console war. Jamie has a whole series of books that are professionally written and edited because he's a professional writer. He has professional editors edit them. And he has a book called about the Atari VCS called Adventure, a book about the Atari 800 called Breakout, a book about the Atari ST called Faster Than Light, a book about arcade games called Attract Mode, and a book about PC DOS games called Starflight, and then this new one, Space Battle. What I'll say is Jamie is almost a brother in arms when it comes to retro gaming. He has a very, very similar, not a similar upbringing, but a similar experience with the systems that he played. I believe he had the Intellivision first, but gotcha. Jamie is his books are not inflammatory. He doesn't do tons of interviews. What Jamie does is he gives you the facts, research facts about the history of the consoles, and then he basically goes through as many games as he possibly can and gives his reviews and opinions. And it goes in like date order, you know, and he even for almost all of them, he puts in something about fandom and something about emulation.
I'll tell you one thing about
stuff like that.
Books
they're
that are
really
so
good, solid books to have on your bookshelf, or just to sit down and read. You know, it's almost like to get a book about a platform and read it on vacation. And it's just you'll find some games in there that you didn't know about that you can go emulate or play. So very, very cool.
Some of the original books that we started reading, you know, the first quarter and some of those Phoenix, they're incredible tomes of information. But a lot of times, what they leave out is information about the games, right? There's a lot of hardware. There's only a few things about the games. Jamie's books take the time to tell you about every single one of his favorite games or the signature games on the system. And it's fantastic.
Right. So that's what I mean. Like I did. It was so funny because you're right. Those early books are very, very in-depth on the machinations going on in the business side. And who was what law, who was suing who, and when marketing released stuff. But there's usually very little information about the actual games, who made them, when they were released, or even feelings about the games. So what Jamie does is he weaves in a little bit of memoir, just a tiny bit, not a lot, but just enough to like color the text. He gives you the facts and some of that, some of the inside information, but not really. I mean, it's more about the history, and then he talks about the games, and it really is. It's a different approach, but I think it really works well.
He has his own personal stories interweaved with the games. It's not as much where you have in between chapters like Grapes of Wrath, where you have the kids buying the candy in the candy store, but it's still fantastic. Love it.
Okay, next up. PC DOS game of the week. This week because we're trying to get some PC DOS, just like Jamie, who had his PC his games, his book Starflight, which is basically about the first, like up until like 1995, like just like before Windows, you know, PC DOS. We're really into PC DOS games as well. You know, it's what we had the podcast when we talked about AT Speed. You know, it was our next generation. You know, now listening to some of the British podcasts, I realized that a lot of the Amiga guys went to the PC much later because the Amiga was a viable platform
because
five or six years
UK,
longer. Yeah.
You could get these games on the Amiga. So they had Dune 2. I didn't even know that. So that's where a lot of them play Dune 2, for instance.
I had no idea. PC DOS Game of the Week this week is the first PC game we ever played. Not the first computer game, because that was on the Apple. First PC game, which is Microsoft Decathlon. Do you remember this?
Yes. Yes.
Microsoft.
Well, we did play one other game. Wesley had an Asteroids game.
Okay, so maybe that was... This is the Hercules. First game I remember us being obsessed with on the PC.
Right, we were obsessed with this.
His dad was not so happy because...
No, because keyboards cost $200.
So it was just like any... So it was Olympic Decathlon, very much like the Activision game, which came out, I think, in 1984. I think it was a little bit patterned after exactly what this was, which is the 10 events, you know, the running events, the long jump, the high jumps, all that stuff, the pole vault, discus, javelin, you know, the 100 meters dash, there's hurdles, there's, you know, like a 2 mile run. I think there's a 2 mile run anyway. It's 10 events and you can play like multiple people and you basically play against each other, just like any other decathlon game. But, I remember the graphics being, it was neat.
Yeah.
I remember it being neat little graphics.
That this is a game where we played it and it was so far advanced from what we'd seen elsewhere, especially on the Apple II. I think even Eric was a little jealous of this game because it was high res. And of course, black and white, we didn't care. It just had these very nice high res graphics and animations. And it was a Microsoft game. Like Microsoft at the time... This is probably their first game for PC.
There's a few other. I don't think the remember Flight Simulator and a couple others.
But that was Sublogic.
Oh.
And then Microsoft bought them out. So, but yeah. Anyway, you can play this, and we can show it right now. It's a little off, but you can play it on archive.org, right? We can do a video.
Yeah.
On it
so right what now. Happens when you go to archive.org is I don't know what graphics mode it was in, but it kind of does this like it recopies it three times on the screen for whatever reason, whatever mode it's in. But anyway, Olympic Decathlon. This is the first PC game we were ever obsessed with,
right?
And it was fun. I remember we played it at Wesley's house, our friend Wesley's house, all the time, all summer long. And I think 1982 or 1983, and his dad was not happy because it was a keyboard breaker.
Got mad about the keyboard. It didn't actually break the keyboard, but still, he did not like to hear. Yeah, his dad was using the computer for his work, and he just heard us hitting those keys really hard. It's like, no,
what are you doing?
Yeah.
Go back and play your Fairchild.
Right, exactly. Well, Wes had a VCS by that time, too. So,
all right, next up, our videos. So just to refresh, last Monday, I put out a new version of Lost Dutchman Found in the Desert. I wanted to do an HD version for a long time, and I thought I had lost the source. And then I went back, and I tried to reload it in, and it turned out that all the things it said it was missing were things that I didn't need, except for a couple pictures. And so I was able to load it back up again, able to also I did a last, the first version had a bunch of AI generated images that I used as filler that I always planned to like replace, but I never found things to replace them with. So in this one, there's still, I think one AI, there's an AI like background or something, but almost everything now are photographs that were either from stock photos that come from CyberLink or our actual photos ourselves
pay for all of that. If we can use legitimate content that's not stealing from artists, or I use AI for now for upgrading the pictures.
Well, that's a fine thing to do, right? Or taking your sketches. I mean, I think the types of things where you take a sketch that you've drawn and you turn it into something else. Right. Like I think that's perfectly legit. It's when it just pulls content from other people's content that you're like, that doesn't really seem.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I'm not all, I've always just liked AI, but don't like AI images.
So I did this for Father's Day because it's kind of a Father's Day story. I'll probably re-promote it this Father's Day just for the hell of it. But this is out now, and in case you're interested, it's upgraded. I think I did look the HD version does look better.
Explain a little bit about what the theme of this is.
So this video started as me replaying The Lost Dutchman Mine, which is, I think, the last, one of the last computer games we bought for the ST. Not the last, but one of the last ones that we bought at the World of Atari at the Disneyland Hotel, which was an Atari show.
It's one of the ones we, one of the last legitimate United States games.
And it was made by guys in the USA. And the game is a little bit like Pirates, but you're a miner. So there's a bunch of mini games, and there's kind of an overhead map, and you're trying to find the Lost Dutchman Mine. Calling it Pirates is unfair to Pirates, but that's the closest thing I can think of, where it's a bunch of different game, like kind of action and adventure game genres mashed together. Anyway, it started as I just wanted to replay this game and make a video about it. And then as I was playing the game, you know, I started thinking about all the stuff that you and I did with our dad,
right,
and how similar the quest was, because what I was finding playing Lost Dutchman was that it seemed like it was impossible.
Right.
So I don't, I don't know if that's actually, I don't want to give away what happens, but it's multiple journeys that all coalesce into one point at the end.
It's not only about the game, but it is about the game.
It is about the game, and there's a lot of content about the game. There's some other content about just what the game, it sort of intertwines with the time that we play the game, and a little bit before and after. So that's what it is. It's the type of thing I'd like to do more of if I could figure out how to do it, what the stories would be. I have one that in the hopper that I'm thinking about Dungeon Master, because I have that letter from Andy Jaros, who worked at FTL, who was like the producer at FTL, and I wrote a fan letter and he wrote back to me, and it's got some really interesting information in it. So I thought that could be one.
I also have the book those guys wrote.
I also have the book that they wrote, which is really interesting as well. That I thought about doing. I'm just not sure what the angle is yet, and I want to make sure, if I'm going to do a second one of like this, I want to make sure that it's not subpar. Two more videos that I'm putting out this week. Worse than two more. I've started Worse Than ET. So now that we've been the fact is, when we went weekly with this podcast, it made it very hard to do anything else.
Yes.
So I dropped a few things. Like for instance, I've still need to do another lesson, 7800 lesson, to finish up the UAP game. But Worse Than ET, I want to finish as well. And I have two that I'm working on now. One is Worse Than ET Marauder. Actually, that's done. That one I put out today, this morning. And then Worse Than ET Pac-Man is a combination of Worse Than ET and an old story we did called The Day Atari Lost the Video Game War. Putting that story together with the Worse Than Pac-Man, because that's got a lot. That's basically the whole story of why Pac-Man could be called the worst game, but it's not really the worst game. Not to ruin the story or anything, but so that's that.
One to look forward to. Okay. Next up.
Jeff's going to open a package.
Oh, okay. Just a second. Okay. Well, I don't have it packaged up anymore, but I wanted to do a really quick unwrapping of a game for the Americans out there. TV Sports Football for the Atari ST.
Oh wow! Hold it up a little bit. There you go. I can't. There's a little bit of a glare on it. Oh. Okay, now I can see it right then. Yeah. No, up. You need to watch Report of the Week. The guy who eats like fast food.
I know how he does it. See,
okay.
I can see on this other screen now. So
TV Sports Football. Realize
this came out by CinemaWare. I didn't know this came. I had no idea this came out with the SD either.
Me either. Yeah,
but
no idea.
But I have a copy of it right here, so it does.
So this is kind of a crack the seal.
This is a crack the seal, sort of open a package, depending if I have a shrink wrap still or not. So
okay.
Okay. So this is really, it is still opening a package. It's just cracking the seal of it. Okay. Wait.
TV Sports Football, eh? I remember this game looked good, but we had it for the PC, and I didn't really play it that much.
Okay, let's just get this box open and see what's in it.
Actually, TV Sports Football could have been another one of the games we played with AT Speed, because I think it had a Tandy graphics.
TV Sports Football disc.
All right. Turn it over, because you had showed it upside down.
There is the disc.
Okay, all right.
Trying to get it without the glare. There it is. I can see it. And then here is a large instruction manual that is 35, 40 pages of plays for the playbook. Let me see. I can see it right there.
Oh, my gosh.
And then here is an Atari ST player's guide. What's different about it? It's basically, you know, maybe re-explaining the game for Europeans. I'm not sure. Just talking those.
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's it. This game, like the other game I opened.
What's
last
the back
week,
of the box look like?
The Astro. Okay, it's right here. The back of the box is TV uh-huh, Sports Football.
Nice.
Like the game I opened last week, when I get time, last week was the game for the VCS, the Space Rocks. I'm going to be playing playing these for a video on my actual machines, but I can't do that yet because I don't have the time right at this moment. But I will be preparing those. A quick crack the seal.
That was fun. Okay. Music update.
Mm.
So this is Brian Travis, the gentleman who wrote our theme song, the Into the Vertical Blank theme song.
Right.
He has lots of interesting and funny songs. And this is his newest video release called HOA. And we'll play it. You want to hear it? Oh, I don't think I shared
seconds.
Sound.
Give us 20 seconds. I love this.
I don't think you can hear it.
Brian is a good friend, and he's really talented.
So I told him we would play it. He's like, "Oh, I'll send people people from his class over to your podcast." I'm thinking, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think they're going to understand or appreciate.
Hello,
this
people
content.
From Brian's class. If you're on here,
yeah, if they do, that's great. But I'm like, they're probably like, "What the is this?"
He also wrote the theme song for the other podcast that I've only done one episode of.
Right. So anyway, I think Brian was okay with us playing most of this video, but maybe we'll play some of it and then we'll send people over to
play some of it. So did the people in his class help him with the video? Or,
yes. Yes. The people in his class helped him with the video.
That's perfect.
Anyway, he has funny songs and I like his stuff. All right.
But he's
also
pretty talented.
Oh, so another music update, just, you know, Tony Longworth. who wrote the song Out of the Vertical Blank, which is what plays at the end of our podcast. That's how it goes.
Right.
He wrote the music, right. And then we did our own little, we took the three different sayings that we had at the beginning of our podcast over the years and put them to the music. Although the one we have at the end of the podcast is just the first piece, but there's the whole thing is also available somewhere if anybody cares.
We can put links to the actual videos for those in the
video. So Tony, this is Tony's a Bandcamp, and at Bandcamp Tony gives, I think there's like 50 songs here that you can use freely in your projects as long as you give him credit. And he also has songs to download and buy. He also has songs that you can license. Tony's music also appears in Heart of Neon, the Jeff Minter documentary, and his music appears in the Llamasoft Digital Eclipse release that came out earlier this year. So Tony's music is getting all over the place. He's really good. He was able to, I said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if you could make a song that was a combination of New Life by Depeche Mode and the Simple Minds song from the Breakfast Club? And I'm like, there's no way Tony's going to be able to do it. And I swear to God, now that I told you that, if you listen to the Out of the Vertical Blank, it has its flavors of both of those. Yeah.
Yes.
Tony's it's pretty fantastic. Amazing. And that's not what Tony does. Tony's the dark, he does like dark music soundtracks and stuff and horror and stuff like that. But he's able to basically make anything. So pretty amazing guy. A good friend of the podcast as well.
A full Atari guy too.
Yeah, full Atari guy.
Full on Atari.
Feedback.
Okay. I'm not stealing it. This is my tribute to 20th Century Game by Game podcast.
Yeah. Okay, feedback. The importance of artifacting. So from the last podcast that we released, this I think it was just a couple of days 100%. Ago, Jeff did not put artifacting into the
but
the,
I did
the game videos. No, you didn't.
But and, you need to set it in two places, and I didn't and know
were,
that.
There were two people who were very upset about the artifacting.
Very upset.
The first one, which you apparently you know Harvey. Harvey Kong Tin said,
"Harvey Kong Tin, I don't know him as much as he makes games for the with Paul Lay.
Well, you know
at PlaySoft for the
you
Atari 8-bit, right?
Right.
So I failed Harvey Kong Tin.
Yeah, he says I think it is a bit sad that you weren't able to show the games using artifacting the way they should have looked. I guess question mark in color. Either you're using an emulator that isn't set up correctly, or not using a CRT equivalent. And the truth was, you just didn't have the right option set on
there's two options set. So in when I set up to play the games in Launchbox, I set each one specifically for NTSC artifacting on. I didn't know that just tells it to use it if it's set up in the emulator already. The emulator is not set to have artifacting on in the video options. Next time I make my video, which is going to come out very soon, actually before this podcast comes out, I will have created another video and all the games have artifacting in them, and it's right here.
If you notice my video from today that I put out, that was about Marauder, had artifacting turned on for the 8th version. Here's another person, TMS5100. Looks like artifacting either was enabled or wasn't working properly in the emulator. A pity.
No, the pity is
me. It's really kind of sad that we ruin these people's day by not having artifacting.
You know who TMS is, Steve?
No, who's TMS?
Thomas Cherry Holmes.
Thomas Cherry Holmes. Okay.
So I failed the guy who makes the best piece of hardware for the Atari 8-bit and the guy who makes the best software for the Atari 8-bit with my feeble attempt at artifacting.
Next up, Creator Spotlight. Who will it be this week, Jeff? Who do you think? We know and love him. It is BCB Coffee Boy, Ballistic Coffee Boy,
Brian Boulding.
Brian is the hardest working, or the second hardest, or probably the hardest. I don't know which one you want to call
John,
him.
With John from Genesis Grown Up, they John are the
from
two Gen-
no, John from Genesis Grown Up is the hardest working man who makes Atari content. Let's be honest. Brian is close second. Brian puts out, he loves the Atari VCS, the new Atari VCS, covers every game that comes out for it. He interviews everyone who has anything to do with it. He also covers old Atari stuff. He plays old Atari games. He does Atari news. He does everything. He's highlighted our podcast a couple times, as well as he will interview. He tries to find everyone he possibly can. Brian he brings a complete positive attitude to everything that he does. Brian's work in YouTube is exceptional. He does so much work. He's a very nice guy. I would say everybody who wants to get your dose of Atari content on a nearly daily basis, go check out Brian.
Exactly.
Now, the boardroom debate. We probably know what this is. People probably know what this is, who's ever watching, if they care, because I probably titled this the name of the episode.
Yeah, that's what we do. So.
Okay, this is a long title, though. I don't know. So original homebrew / pro games versus remake homebrew / pro games. So this is original versus basically arcade remakes. You know, a lot of the remakes are arcade games or other games that never came out for those systems, where original are like original new games. I like original games, and you happen to like what?
I like remakes more for very specific reasons.
And I like originals more.
But I do enjoy original games also.
Right, and I enjoy remakes as well. But I think, but we both kind of sat side on a different side of what we actually purchased. So here are the games that I've purchased, and you know, most the last four homebrews or pro brews or whatever you want to call them that I purchased: Time Salvo for the 7800, Ricky and Vicky for the 7800. Circus Convoy by Audacity for the 2600, and also Halo 2600. And now Halo 2600 is kind of a demake, so it might not count, but it never exists. I don't know. I say like it's I consider it an original game. I think it's an original, interesting idea. And I kind of gravitate towards this. So what do you gravitate towards, Jeff?
Favorite homebrews right now, or pretty much, are from the 2600 would be... So mine would be Galagon and Draconian. And
those are good.
The Scramble port. And then for the Atari 8-bit, it's basically the same games, except for there's currently a Galaga game, or there could be, but the Scramble game for the 8-bit and Bosconian and Time Pilot, those are my favorite to play. I do own lots of other ones, too. But for some reason, I find myself playing those. And the reason being, for the most part, is I think of them not necessarily I'm buying games to play as a long-term thing. I'm seeing them for what the possibility is of maybe if I decided to ever code something. And that's how I judge the game that I make, is how close I can get it to the arcade or some source, right?
Well, that's interesting because I play these games as well, based on the types of games that I would aspirationally like to make, but I don't care how close they are to arcade games. Right. I really care about making original games. Maybe that's it. Like I tend towards wanting to make something original, and I don't really care about how close it is to an arcade game. I actually don't even care that much about the pyrotechnics involved, right? I just want it to be a fun game, whether it's made, you know, in 4K on Atari 2600 or 16K in a 7800, you know, with Atari Basic. I don't care. I challenge myself to just maybe make a fun game. Now, I'm not saying that I've actually ever done it. That's the challenge.
Yeah, I get bogged down all the time in the Czar Jazz. Like, how cool can I make it look? Can I do something that, like, it has to look good? And of course, I can't draw, so me looking good is, you know, it has to have lots of parallax scrolling or something, right? Or whatever, particles. And so I get bogged down in that because I want the engine to be really good. And then I kind of try to graft a game on afterwards, and, you know, it doesn't always make a good game. But so that's the difference, really.
So for the 2600, I'll say, actually, for the most part, I do probably enjoy, because the 2600 lives in that era of what could have been.
Right.
There is a sense in me that I'd like to see the arcade games that people make that were not made. Either they make games that were never made, or games that could have never been made because they're just so technically intricate now, with lots of memory. And you're like, wow, the 2600 could do amazing things, right? And that's one thing. But when it gets to the 7800, I kind of more like original games, because I don't think that many games, because not that many games were made for the 7800. So I'm like, what other games could have been made? What is possible with the 7800? I think that's why I gravitate towards original games.
On the 7800, I like both. And that's why I didn't even mention A7800. Obviously, I do like all the games for the 7800 that I have. I have lots of homebrews for the 7800. A lot of them are arcade ones. But I do, and I don't have Ricky and Vicky. I never had the time. I never had a chance.
Fat chance. It's like $400 now.
I know. I won't get it now. But when I see the games that I like, that if there was a game like Cybernoid on the Atari ST and the Commodore 64, the Amiga, the Speccy, all those machines, there's somebody who made a game like Cybernoid. It's not Cybernoid. I don't care that it wasn't a port of Cybernoid. There's no game like it. And the Cybernoid is a game where you're flying through rooms in a helicopter and shooting at stuff. It's room by room, like blaster. It's really cool, flying blaster and around like caves and stuff. So on the 7800 specifically, I just want to see games that show off how powerful it is, or are fun.
Yeah, or how powerful it could be, right?
It could be. Right.
So, and I do like. I mean, Time Salvo is a great game from the 7800, and it does that. I mean, Ricky and Vicky is incredible, and kind of does the same thing.
Now, you know, Crossfire. I think that, got a C from us last week, I think, or a B. But Time Salvo, that's an A to me.
You know, it's Time Salvo's got a lot more to it. Let's just be honest. But it is sort of like Crossfire. But it uses lots of graphics from existing arcade games. So it's fun, and I just love the idea of Time Salvo.
Me too.
It's really cool. When it comes to like the 8-bit and ST, it's a little bit different. I like to see new games, but in some ways, I really want to play a good role-playing game on either of them, which I haven't really seen in a homebrew role-playing game on either platform, but that's what I like to see.
There's a few on the ST that have come out, little like adventure-style role-playing games. On the 8-bit, I think you're stuck with some of those three-quarter perspective games. They do, like, I think, like, Night Lore, I'm trying to think of it, but I don't know if that came out or not. But there's some games, but yeah, there's no real hardcore RPG for either one of them that came out now. Obviously, back then, there's a bunch of them, but we had them. I mean,
as homebrew, if I was going to play homebrew, that's what I would tend towards. Yes. When I think of a computer game homebrew that I want to own, it's probably something that feels more expansive to me than, so like the 2600, you can see that's the era that we played mostly arcade games. So it feels kind of natural to say, what other arcade games could have been made? 7800, we didn't really get, its life was cut short. So seeing what it can do is a whole different, that's the aspect. But on those, we did play lots of great games on the 8-bit and the ST. And so wanting to have that experience again, like I would love if someone did, and I don't think they could ever do this, but, I would like to see Lost Dutchman 2, with that sort of upgrades everything in that game and makes it better. With a different experience. Maybe it's not Lost Dutchman, maybe it's something else. But the ideas around that game are very interesting that I would love to see, another version of that.
For the games that I've seen coming out for the ST and the 8-bit, I do see just an incredible... I mean, ST doesn't have that many that are coming out. But for the 8-bit especially... there's a nice cross-section of these three types. There's more than these three, but these are the three. There's arcade ports. There's ports from other systems that are coming out. And then there's just unique. There's lots of unique games. And I do enjoy the unique games because a lot of them are more slower puzzle games. I'm going to call them Chips Challenge or Sobacon style games because that's what they are,
right,
really. There's,
right.
Like, there's a lot of Sobacon style games. And made well... with a uniqueness, that can be the most fun game. Because it's just, physics puzzles and things like that. And when those come out for the Atari 8-bit, I like to play those a lot. And along with the arcade ports. But you really, any homebrew that comes out is amazing that someone got something done. Anyone. But I prefer to see the power of the machine against another machine.
So if you were going to suggest to people a single homebrew arcade port, what would it be?
I would do something that you can't play any other way. So Baby Pac-Man for the Atari 7800, because you can't really play that in any other way. And it's one of the few ports. I know I tried to send a Jimmy G a way to make pinball machines work on the PC, and I just have not figured it out. So that's one way to play it. Like, one way to play a good a good pinball slash arcade game combo is in on 7800 with the Baby Pac-Man.
So, and then for me, I would tell you to get Ricky and Vicky, but it's just too expensive. I don't know if they sell the ROM yet. It's just, it is a really great game. It's also extremely hard. But if you want a, another 7800 homebrew, that's great. Any of the Dragon series that's out are great. And right. Of course, Time Salvo, I think is a really fun game too.
Yeah.
And then Circus Convoy, but you know, and that's a whole other thing, you know, and then with the new one, coming out, Alien Abduction, that's coming out from Audacity as well. That could be a really cool game. We don't know yet because we haven't played it or had it, but I would say right now, you know, for the 2600, I would get Circus Convoy to play it, obviously, because it's a David Crane, you know, design game. Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of history there.
Circus Convoy is the most elaborate game graphically and gameplay wise ever put into an Atari cartridge that doesn't use any extra chips. Uses right. extra memory, but not extra chips. Doesn't
and then,
use a map or anything like that.
I'd say Time Salvo or one of the Dragon games for the 7800.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
But there's so many other good ones out there. EXO. Yeah, I mean, that's so just a limit. Games. I mean, go watch Zero Page Homebrew. All there. They have
Night
all
Guy.
Of it.
I mean, there's so many. Yeah. Right. Zero Page Homebrew is the place to go.
Zero Page Homebrew. I mean, out. We probably should just highlight them next week as the creator. Next time
we
as the creator.
Should.
Because
next time, not next week. Next week
next,
is.
Next time. Next time, probably 2 weeks from now.
Yes. But next week will be the Atari ST Top 20 Run and Gun. Platform blasters. And if you had an Atari ST, it might be interesting to you. If you had an Amiga, you can see the differences and that of a machine that wasn't quite as powerful doing some of the same games. If you never had any of these machines, you might want to take a look. There's a lot of games that you can play in emulation with a single button press, and you don't need to know a lot about the machine to play. And I will explain how to play them.
I wonder what's going to be number one, Jeff. I really wonder what's going to be number one on your list. So I guess we'll see.
But, okay, well, we'll check it out. You could do a tier list afterwards. You can tell me the games you hate that are on my list.
I don't think I'm going to do that.
Everything that you'd put in E that I put in A.
I don't know. We will do another tier list. Yeah, we got some good feedback about the tier list, so we'll do that again. I'm not going to do it every time, but we'll do
no,
some.
No, I have a tier list. I'll have a tier list for my next edited podcast. I'll have a tier list. But
oh, cool. We'll see. Okay, well, now we are leaving the overscan, and we are going
into the vertical blank.
That's right.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full-stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.
We are the forgotten generation, a misplaced slice of the 20th century when birth rates were as low as expectations for the future. We lived under the threat of constant nuclear annihilation, playing outside, but always inherently knowing the future was indoors. We are the second half of Generation X. We were some of the first to play video games, program home computers, and record CDs to cassette mixtapes. Our generation was nourished by new wave, imperfect punk rock, and John Hughes movies. We built Web 1.0 from the ground up using our childhood 8-bit and 16-bit programming skills. They call us Gen X. We prefer the vertical blank generation, where magic happens between the lines, because that's where we live, love, and thrive. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.
The vertical blank is the space between the last line of the current frame and the first line of the next, where off-screen calculations create a cathode ray tube display. It sits literally between the lines, invisible yet all-seeing, in a void where magic occurs that is never seen, only experienced. The vertical blank is an omniscient force containing the nuances that make our nostalgia a reality. It's the transcendental location that holds our best memories, biggest joys, greatest fears, and our most terrible losses. You've been warned. You can stop this tape now, turn around, for once you've entered, there may be no escape. All the scan lines have been written. It's time to enter the vertical blank.
Into the vertical blank.
Next frame calculated. Prepare to write new data. Feed blank ending.